Hi everyone, it's Deb. Welcome to the Starving for God BBA workshop. We are moving along here. Today we're going to be talking about steps 5, 6, and 7. So, you know, there's like a different pace, a different cadence, a different rhythm for different sections of the 12 steps, I find. And, you know, the first three steps, well, especially that first step, it's like really, really takes a long time. And then, you know, 1, 2, and 3, it's pretty intensive with the idiot's guide questions, and there's sort of a pace that we get into with that. And then we move into the inventory process, which kind of has its own rhythm to it. And now you're going to find that things move pretty darn quickly. We're going to be taking, after today's call, we're going to be taking a 2-week break so that everyone can get caught up, do their fifth step, do their 6 and 7, and actually begin transcribing for step 8. So that by the time we reconvene, we're going to be reviewing how to do your step 8. A number of you who have already done the work might already want to show up with your cards done. So we'll talk about that a little bit more later. But then we go into steps. I mean, it kind of just moves from here each week. So wherever you are in the work, I just want you to say, it's perfect and it's beautiful wherever you are. No one is wrong or bad, or, you know, I'm not shaming anyone for being where you are. I'm really, really excited for those of you who are on the call today and who are actually at this step, because the questions that you have today are really going to help everybody at all their various places where they are in the work right now. So let's find out who is on the call. Go ahead and unmute yourself.
Oh, yeah.
And we got one person. Who's there? You are not muted right now, whoever just jumped on the line. So why don't you announce yourself?
So it's Suzanne.
Hey, Suzanne. Thanks for being
here.
Hi, Suzanne. Yep. Suzanne from?
Oh, I'm from San Mateo. I'm actually in Sonoma County right now.
Well, thank you for calling us from on location.
Yes. Okay, I didn't realize we weren't muted, so I'll mute myself.
Okay.
Hi, it's Lynn calling from Sherman Oaks, California, compulsive eater, drug addict.
Hi, Lynn.
Hi, Jan from Burbank, compulsive eater.
Hi, Jan.
Hi.
This is Sue from Western Mass, compulsive eater and debtor.
Hi, Sue.
Deb from San Diego, compulsive eater and addict.
Hi, Deb.
Hi.
Hi, it's Hortense from Jerusalem. Recovering compulsive eater and recovering codependent.
Hi, Hortense. So glad that you're here.
Thank you. Same here.
Well, welcome, everyone who is here. So let's get into some prayer and a couple minutes of meditation, and we've got a lot to go over today, so I'm really, really excited about that. So, I have a sick cat who, anyway, sorry, that was very distracting. Okay, so let's start with the set-aside prayer to help me face and be rid of the things that are blocking me. So, God, please enable me to set aside everything I think I know for an open mind and a new experience. Please help me to face and be rid of the things in myself which are blocking me from you, other people, and myself. Okay. So, what I'm going to share with you how I do the fifth step, and how I do the fifth step according to how I've been taken through, through Tyla and through the process of the BBA, and it might vary slightly from maybe how some of you who've done the BBA before have done it, but this is how I do it. So what you'd want to bring with you to the fifth step is your transcribed big book, and have them bring their transcribed big book. And I highly, highly, not just suggest, but almost insist that they have already transcribed the sections for the fifth step before they do their fifth step, because there's some considerations there, and it's important that the person consider these things before going into their fifth step. And then, of course, they're going to bring all of their inventories from their fourth step and their Big Book Awakening. And then I recommend that people bring a red pen and a highlighter. So when I sit down with someone, and the other thing too, this is just a personal thing. So this isn't necessarily what you need to do. You're going to feel guided in one way or another. I usually break up fifth steps with people. Like I'm just not like a marathon person who can just go for like 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 hours straight. Like I just can't do that. And so I usually, after about three and a half hours, I'll go in like a three and a half hour chunk, and then I'll reschedule for another time. Now there are circumstances where that, you know, sometimes we'll just like go for it for 5 hours, but I tend to not do that. And that's just, you know, me honoring my body, myself, and like the container that I'm holding. And you're going to feel guided in your own way. But every time we sit down together, we're going to say a set aside prayer. And I do the one for the one that we just did today, please help me face and be rid of, and then a 5-minute meditation. And so if it's somebody who has done the BBA fifth step before, then I'm going to, I'm just going to read the first paragraph that you get to on page 72. I'm going to like read certain sections from the transcribed portion of the considerations for the fifth step. So the pages are from page 72 to the top of page 75. And if it's somebody who's done it before, then I'm going to read that first paragraph on page 72, and we're going to review what it says here. So, having made my personal inventory, what shall I do about it? We've been trying to get three things here: a new attitude, a new relationship with our Creator, and to discover the obstacles in our path. Okay, those are the three things we've got to get clear on. And it says that we've admitted certain defects. We've ascertained in a rough way what the trouble is. We've put our finger on the weak items in our personal inventory, and now these are about to be cast out. So a little bit later on in this paragraph, it's going to talk about the nature of my defect. And so there's a comparison that I can get with, well, what are the defects of character versus the nature of my defect? And the defects of character are like those selfish actions and those selfish attitudes. So remember that analogy we had, or the metaphor of the tree. And like the leaves and, you know, the kind of the top of the tree are my selfish actions, and the branches are my selfish attitudes. And then it goes down to like the trunk and the roots. And those are my defects of character. Those are my delusions. Those are my fears. And it's those things, my delusions and my fears, that I am powerless to change or fix or do anything about. That's where the world of self-help just completely can't help me. And so we get this term cast out, and it's really important to note that the word cast, and we've had that word come up before, that word cast is very much a biblical term, a spiritual term, a term that is not used in a therapy session. And so this is something that is not going to be done by human aid. This is something that only God can do. God's going to cast these things out, these defects of character. And so it means that we have admitted to God, to ourselves, another human being, the exact nature of our defects, it says. And, of course, this brings us to the fifth step of the program of recovery, which we've mentioned in the preceding chapter. So, again, if it's somebody who's done the BBA before, then I'm going to just go over some of the sections that I highlight. If it's somebody who hasn't done the Big Book Awakening fifth step process before, we're going to read all of this together. And I'm, you know, it's going to be interactive. I'm going to ask them certain questions. And one of the big questions that I'm going to ask is, can you see that a solitary self-appraisal is insufficient? That's what we get in that next paragraph. That you just doing this analysis on your own, that you just writing your fourth step and starting to identify certain things about how you're running the show in your life and how you're relying on self and, you know, how you're, you know, acting in relationships, can you see that self-appraisal is insufficient to actually get you free from this? And then the next big section that I'm going to, or the next big sentence that I'm going to take a moment to talk about with them is at the top of page 73. It says, I'll just read from the bottom of 72. So time after time, newcomers have tried to keep themselves certain facts about their lives, trying to avoid this humbling experience. They've turned to easier methods. Almost invariably, they acted out. Having preserved with the rest of the program, they wondered why they fell. We think the reason is that they never completed their house cleaning. They took inventory all right, but they hung on to some of the worst items in stock. They only thought they had lost their egoism and fear. They only thought they had humbled themselves, but they had not learned enough of humility, fearlessness, and honesty in the sense that we find it necessary until they told someone else all their life story. So we're going to take a moment right there, and I'm going to ask the person, do you have any ticket to the grave things that you haven't told anyone that you need to express at this time? Because I want them to have the most transformative experience. And if they're still holding on to something, a little nugget, something that they're really ashamed about, something that they thought they would never tell anyone before, then that's a little area where they're still holding on to self, they're still holding on to agnosticism. And so I'm going to give them an opportunity to share that. Oftentimes, people will share at that time. I'm also going to ask that question at the end of the fifth step, just in case something else comes up, or maybe they kind of just need to get warmed up in the process a little bit. Maybe they're just a little overwhelmed at first, and they're not ready just to dive in that deep. So I'm going to give them two opportunities to share any take-it-to-the-grave things that they want to literally get off their chest. And then at the top of page 75, so it says this first full paragraph, when we decide who is to hear our story, we waste no time. We've written an inventory, and we are prepared for a long talk. So then it says we explain to our partner meaning me, the person that's listening to their fifth step, what we're about to do and why we have to do it. And so I pause right there, and I say, do you want to tell me what you're about to do and why you have to do it? And this is powerful. I didn't used to do this, but I just started doing this after it was done to me, and it was a really powerful moment where I got to connect back in with my first step, back in with the desperateness of which I need this program, of which I need God, and really say, like, why am I doing this? And what is the meaning for this? And why do I have to do it? And so that's a powerful moment that you really allow somebody to re-engage with their own willingness and motivation and desperateness for the solution, for the freedom, for moving through this process. So I'll just like I usually just have them read the first sentence of the next paragraph. We pocket our pride and go to it, illuminating every twist of character, every dark cranny of the past. And then I have them stop right there. And then we're going to close the book, and we're going to go into the actual inventory. So that's what I'm going to do with you right now. And my role as the witness bearer is exactly that. So I'm not here. Here, hang on a second. Somebody's not on mute. You guys. Okay, that was distracting. Okay, so I'm not here to be the expert analysis for this person or be their therapist or even know what I'm supposed to say at every time, at every, you know, turn, every bend. Like, that's not what my role is. I'm here to bear witness as this person gets honest and shares their truth with God. And so when we go into that prayer space in the very beginning, one of the things that I say to myself as I'm sitting in that meditation is, like, I consciously invite God in to this sacred container, and I ask God to speak to me and through me and to the other person and through the other person, illuminating what we both need to hear. And I hold that as a very, very sacred thing. And once that inner prayer is made, I then trust everything else that comes after that. And I trust that both of us are going to be guided because God's actually running the show and running this experience. And that also doesn't mean that it's not an interactive experience, because my role as bearing witness is also as someone who's there to help them prepare for their step 6 and step 7. I'm there to help them identify what is objectionable about the way that they've been living and you know, identify what's objectionable in their resentment inventories and in all their other inventories. And so it's definitely we're going to be sharing, and this is a big disclaimer that I make when I'm entering into this process with someone. I tell them, okay, we're now going to read, you know, all of your inventory to God and with me as your witness, and I let them know that every time I personally sit in inventory with an inventory and invite God in, I always see more truth. And I let them know that as we go through each inventory, new truth may be revealed, and that it may come through them, it may come through me. And I let them know that this in no way is minimizing the truth that they uncovered when they were writing their own inventory. Because I made that mistake in the past. Like, I would sit with people and, you know, I would see, because it's sometimes easier to see with the objectivity of a friend listening to the situation than it is the person who's in the situation. And so I would share intuitive hits that would come to me. And what I didn't say in the beginning, in the first few times I used to do listen to Fifth Steps, was this isn't trumping the truth that you already discovered on your own. That's not what's going on right here. And so I like to just put that disclaimer out there, is that it's all stuff that is wanting to be revealed. And further than that, sometimes I get an intuitive hit. And while I think that the intuitive hit is for them, it might be for me. So I might say something and say, look, I don't know if this lands or resonates for you, but what about this? And I make a suggestion. And then the person will say, yeah, no, that's not really it. That doesn't really fit for me. And I encourage people to trust their own inner guidance system when it comes to that stuff. That just because something comes through me to share with them doesn't mean that, like, they're somehow blind and they can't see it and it must be true. Like, they can sense, that fits or that doesn't fit. And usually tears are a good indicator. If something makes me cry when I hear it, then usually it's a fit for me. But I do just give people all of that as like a disclaimer even before we get into it, just so that they can learn to trust their own inner guidance system even more. So I know I mentioned in the call-in email that I sent out today in the email blast that there's three major questions that we want to bring into the fifth step process. And hopefully the person who is listening to your fifth step is a VBA person who is armed with these questions and knows when to ask them, so that you, the person who's giving your fifth step, can experience the depth of what this step has to offer. So the three questions, and I will, I'll put these three questions in the playback email that goes out so that you don't need to feel like you've got to like scribble the questions down right now. I'll put them into the playback email. So three questions that I want to be armed and ready with are, number one, do I see the behavior here that's objectionable? Okay, or do you know, if I'm sitting with somebody, do you see, I would say to them, the behavior here that's objectionable? Number two, can you see that on your own power you could not have done any different? And number three, is there anything you are clinging to that you were unwilling to let go of? Those are the three questions that we want to bring into the resentment inventory process and into all the inventories, into the whole four-step inventory process. And then I'll have the person begin reading, starting with their first resentment inventory. And the way that I have them do it is I have them start with, like, they actually are going to say, I am resentful at, you know, John, the cause. He lied, he was arrogant, he was immature, and da-da-da, the target. I can't trust him, you know. Self-esteem, I'm going to have them actually say each thing. I am da-da-da-da-da. The fear, da da da. If there's two sentences in a section, like maybe you have two I am statements, or you've got two pride statements, like you've got an others statement, and you've got a no one statement, I have them read the associated fear with each line before moving to the next one. So, you know, others should respect me, fear of not being respected, no one should cut me off mid-sentence, fear of not being taken seriously. For example. Okay, so it's important when we go through the third column of our resentment inventory to see, like, why am I doing this? And if you remember back to that metaphor of kind of sitting in the director's chair, looking out at the scenes of my life and seeing how I'm living when I'm playing God, when I'm assigning the roles, and when, you know, when I feel all burned up and all resentful or pissed off or irritated because you aren't living up to the role I've assigned you, or I'm not living up to the role I've assigned myself. And I've got to see how both roles are delusional, because I'm the one that's doing the assigning, I'm playing God. So that's what my third column is all about. And when I'm going through with someone, before we flip over to the back page or that the realization in the fourth column, I'm going to pause and I'm going to ask them, do you see what's objectionable here? And give them an opportunity to just scan over their third column. Now, technically, the whole thing is objectionable, right? But oftentimes, there are certain statements that are particularly more objectionable than others. And I tend to find in my own inventories that I tend to have pretty objectionable statements in my security and in my sex relations. Because, you know, sometimes it'll say, you know, like in a security statement, like, I need to feel loved by others, but then we tack on that to be okay. And it's like, ooh, as soon as I make a to be okay at the end of a sentence, I'm literally saying I'm not okay unless I get a certain kind of response from people around me, which is really, really making other people my God. And so it's pretty objectionable to me. So there's someone in our group who's calling me right now, so I'm just wondering why. Okay, I wonder why. Okay, so I'm just reading my notes here. And then in the sex relations statement, oftentimes it's kind of like, how am I making myself wrong as a woman? And sometimes I'm making myself wrong as a woman because I think a real woman would have been able to act in some kind of perfect way, of which I'm not acting, and I'm not okay about it. Or I am just coming from a place of incredibly, you know, like delusional, like just a, like a delusional belief pattern. And so there are all the ways that I can see that I'm not actually, you know, like it's objectionable to me how I'm moving through my life believing these things. Okay, so then we get into the realization. And the realization, I actually spend a little, you know, a little bit of time in the realization, because what I find oftentimes is that we tend to skip over this part because it just kind of stays in our brain. It just stays in our mind. And so I also want to just reiterate, because even though I've gone over this with people, and even though when I'm listening to a fifth step, I've gone over it with my sponsee, I find that sometimes stuff gets lost in translation and they haven't written their realization in the way that, you know, that I was like suggesting. So I just want to go over it one more time here, because this is how I experience it, and it is really incredibly effective this way. So I take, it's like my realization is pretty much verbatim every single phrase from my cause. I take every single phrase from my cause and I turn it into a question, and I ask myself, did I do this very thing to this person and or others? So that my realization, like 99.9% of the time, reads exactly the way I have written my cause, but with the names swapped. So like, for example, you know, let's say John is I'm resentful at John. He's arrogant, he's immature, and he doesn't appreciate me, okay? So in my realization, I would have asked myself, well, have I ever been arrogant to John and others? Have I ever been immature to John and others? Have I ever not appreciated John and others? And then I will write, I have been arrogant to John and others. I have been immature to John and others, and I have not appreciated John and others. So it's literally verbatim. Now, there might be some specific words or things. Maybe you never stole money from that person, but have you ever stolen peace of mind from other people? And if so, you can say, I've stolen peace of mind from other people, okay? But what's important in the fifth step process, that's my little four-step diversion here, what's important in the fifth step process is that I take time in the realization with this person to ask that person, the process needs to go from our head, from a mental understanding, into our heart. And so I'll ask that the person who's reading their fifth to picture that other person sitting in front of them. And I ask them if they can actually see or feel that this is a sick person just like them. And that neither party, neither them nor the other person, is bad or good, but rather it's just two sick people who are trying to get well. And it doesn't make the other person right and you wrong. It isn't about right and wrong. It's just about facing and being rid of the things that are blocking me. And my need to see this person as somehow sicker than me, and hold on to that anger about that person, that's blocking me from God. And so I can't move on from this process. I can't move on from the realization until I can actually see that the realization, I take that into my heart. It goes from my head into my heart. And so that the experience isn't, yeah, I can see that from my mind. I can get that out here. But rather, I can feel that in my heart. And it makes me sad, or it makes me compassionate, or whatever it is. It's a softening. It's an internal softening. And only after they've had that experience, then we move on into the fourth column. And we start looking at the defects of character, the selfish actions and the selfish attitudes. And this, it should read like, I mean, the selfish actions, the way that I write them, it reads like just like a string of verbs, essentially, like I shun, I yell, I punish, I gossip, I withdraw. So that's how I do it. Sometimes people have like short, brief sentences, but it's not time for story. It's like it's your actions, the actual things that happen. If you're noticing that you're writing things that are more like attitudes, then that really belongs in the next section. So then we get into the selfish attitude, which is the next section. And I actually have the person say out loud, my selfish attitudes were or are. You know, I have them say my selfish actions are and my selfish attitudes are or were, and then read whatever they are. Like, I'm better than you. Don't you know who I am? You know, they should sound like actual thoughts that are running through your head, like when you were engaging in those selfish actions. Then we get into the nature of my defects, right? Those delusions and those fears. And these are the things that I need God to remove from me. These are the things that I can't change or fix on my own. And so I have the person say, and I make sure that they actually have written it this way, I was in the delusion that, or I am in the delusion that. Because I have personally found that when people have asked me to do it that way, I see more truth. It's a humbling experience to actually write the words, like, I'm in delusion. And so it's an opportunity to just have that extra experience of humility. And then the same thing with the fears. I have them say, I was afraid that, and they read their fears. And then before we go into the harm, before I have them read like the specific harms that came up with this resentment, I have them work it back up. I have them take like their biggest fear, like whatever fear they wrote in their fear, you know, like I was afraid that, or like whatever that thing is. And sometimes as they read through the fourth column, sometimes as we go through that fourth column, new delusions and new fears will be revealed. And so whatever in that moment feels like the most powerful or potent fear, we'll take that one. And then we want to take that and then see, okay, so it drives the delusion that, and then we're going to look at the delusion section. And we should be able to see the link of how that fear drives a particular delusion. And then we should be able to see how that delusion drives our selfish attitudes. And then how those selfish attitudes drive and justify all of the actions And so it should fit together like a puzzle. Like it should be able to work all the way back up as it works down. And then, of course, I'll listen to the specific harms that came up. And I'll also ask them, if it's appropriate, what's the ripple effect of how you have been or acted in this resentment? What is the ripple effect of how that has been, you know, in your life? And then before we move on from that resentment inventory, I'm going to go through those two other questions. So looking at the whole thing, well, I'm going to ask them again, can you see what's objectionable? Because for me personally, I always just circle all of the things I wrote in my the nature of my defects, right? All of my delusions and all of my fears, I just circle all of that because it is objectionable to me that I believe those things, that I'm living my life that way, because it's just, that's agnosticism right there. And then I'll go into the other questions. Can you see that on your own power you couldn't have done any different? Like, this is you on your own power. And then, is there anything that you're clinging to that you're unwilling to let go of? You know, for example, are you still holding on to the person in column one is thicker than me? And it's just important to make a note of those things, maybe put a star by it. This is where the highlighters and the red pens. What I do when I'm going through with someone is where there's something that's objectionable, whether it's in the third column or the fourth column, I have them write in red pen the abbreviation of the letters OBJ and like circle or highlight that sentence, because it'll just make it easier for them when they're going back to their sixth step to be able to have that as a reference point. And so we'll go through each inventory that way. And it's a powerful, powerful experience. And then when they're complete with that, then we're going to go into the fear inventory. And before each inventory, we're going to say a prayer. So the fear inventory prayer is, God, please help me see the truth about my fears. And I have them actually say, again, I have a fear of, and they're going to read whatever their fear is in column A, you know, like, I've got a fear of being not enough, because if I'm not enough, I fear I'll be rejected, and then I fear I'll be abandoned, and then I fear da-da-da-da-da, and then goes all the way to self-reliance fails me. And then they go to the next, and they're going to read every single row going across. And if they, just like we talked about when we were going over the fear grid and how to do it, is that the lines should get shorter and shorter because you're going to have a lot of repeating words. So if you get to a place, let's say your line two is, you know, I have a fear of being rejected, because then it means that I will be this, da, 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 whatever. And then let's say you get to that word that's already lined up with what you have in the column above it. You cross out the word. So I would say, if I got to the word abandoned, I would just say, and I crossed out abandoned, and then I would move to the next line. And you just go through the entire thing. And here's what we want to see in the fear inventory. And you can ask the person this. So when they get to the end of their fear inventory, because sometimes it feels like a lot of busy work, and it's like, okay, but I don't feel any different, and what was the point of that? And so I ask them, well, can you see that fear is a conscious decision to rely on self and not on God? And that when we begin to rely on God, our fears fall from us, right? So then I'll ask, do you find it objectionable that you are relying on fear to run your life? And then I'll say, are you now willing to turn to God when these fears crop up? Are you ready to outgrow your fears? And then we'll move into the sex inventory. And again, the prayer for the sex inventory, God, please help me to see the truth about my conduct and relationships. The first page, I'm going to have them read each section and the title of each section. So like, my motives for getting involved were, and then read it. My specific conduct that came up was, the major points. I'm going to have them read each thing just so I can kind of keep up with them. The first page is more like, how do I say it, informational. It's kind of setting the stage. We don't need to spend a lot of time on the first page because the meat is really in the second page where we start to look at, okay, yeah, but how have I been showing up here? So the first page kind of just fills the listener in. And then when they go through that second page, they're going to be reading each section as well. So, you know, where was I selfish? Where was I dishonest? And I'm going to be listening to each one of those things. And that might be a time where, you know, I mean, throughout the entire inventory, but especially the resentment inventory and the sex inventory, there might be questions that come through to me to ask them to consider as they're reading these things. Maybe you see something and you want to just say, well, how about, was the truth, did you omit any truth? Sometimes we're like, well, I didn't outright lie. And it's like, yeah, but did you omit the truth? So sometimes we can help that person just see more truth just by asking some questions. And then they're going to come all the way down, read any specific harms that came up while doing their inventory. We're going to listen to all of that. And then I ask them the same questions that I did from the resentment inventory. Can you see that you were powerless? Because there's so many ways that we make ourselves wrong. I mean, I don't know about you, but I have like these two extremes. On the one hand, I am like really blind to the things that I'm actually doing because I'm like living in my own delusions. I don't see it. But then on the other hand, I'm like the most critical, judgmental, self-hating person who is like so punitive when it comes to looking at myself. Neither is aligned with God. And I don't think that that's what this process is about. This process for me is about finding the compassion, both for myself and for the other people in my life. It's for realizing that at the bottom of all of this is my truest self, which is my connection to God, my absolute infinite love, infinite potential, and that all this other stuff is like the tartar and the plaque that is caked on me, that is blocking me from just being that absolute beacon of light and love that is aligned with God. So when we look at this stuff, it's really important, and you might be in the role of listening to somebody's fifth, and you can kind of see and hear them being really critical about themselves, and it's an opportunity for you to be a stand of the very unconditional love that you know God has for them and that is innately in them. They just can't connect with it right now. And so you get to reflect that to them. And maybe the way that comes out is asking them, you know, can you see that you're powerless to do any different? And not coming from a place of, look at you, you bad, shameful person that you couldn't do any different, but rather, can you have compassion for that child or that teenager or that adult or, you know, that person who really was doing the best that they could at that time, and that might have been the very, very best decision that they could make with the tools and the information that they had, and it allowed you to survive that time. Can you embrace that person who made those decisions at that time? You know, and there's so much incredible healing that we get to have while we're doing this inventory. So that becomes a very, very powerful question. And then, of course, identifying, is there anything that you're clinging to? You know, I mean, I remember a couple years back, like, I was really clinging to the attention that I would get from men. I really And not just like men in my life, but like strangers. Like I wanted to get that attention. I still needed that. And I had to really look at that. Like, do I really need, you know, because I had this like this push-pull relationship with it. Like I didn't want too much attention that made me feel icky. But I also wanted to walk in a room and turn heads. And if I didn't walk into a room and turn heads, then it was like, what's wrong with me? And that whole attachment was completely objectionable to me. And yet there was a part of me that was like, yeah, but I still want that. I still want that fixed. That's just one example I'm just throwing out there. But so it's important to look at these things that we're clinging to, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more. So once we're done with listening to all of the sex inventory, then I'm going to have them read their sex ideal. And hopefully what they've done, when by the time they come to do the fifth step with me, they've already taken all their sex inventory, they've laid them all out in front of them, they've looked at their answers to question number 9, they've reviewed all of that. And like I think it was Kimberly mentioned from the last call, which was a great suggestion, another possible place to look is to look at those delusional statements that I put in my sex relations, you know, what I think a real woman is supposed to be and how I think she's supposed to be. Taking all of that, right, and then considered, okay, what actually is the ideal? God, who will you have me be? In relationship with myself, in relationship with others, in lovership, in friendship, how will you have me show up? Show me who you'll have me be. And we get to, you know, hopefully they've done all of that. They've written their sex ideal, and so they're going to read that ideal to you. And once they're done with all of that, then we're going to go back into the big book. So I made that sound so quick. It's not quick. That will take a number of hours. But then we'll go back to page 75 in the big book, and I'll have them read the rest of that middle paragraph on the page. And I'll have them read the fifth step promises. Actually, you know what? Before I have them read the fifth step promises, I asked them one last time, are there any ticket to the grave things that came up while you were giving your inventory that you want to share right now? And I'll give them an opportunity to share if anything comes up. And then I'll have them read the rest of that paragraph. We get this beautiful, this languaging is so beautiful, and these promises are so beautiful. It says, once we have taken the step withholding nothing, right, that's that take it to the grave question, we are delighted. We can look the world in the eye. We can be alone at perfect peace and ease. Our fears fall from us. We begin to feel the nearness of our Creator. We may have had certain spiritual beliefs, but now we begin to have a spiritual experience. The feeling that the overeating or restricting problem has disappeared will often come strongly. We feel we are on the broad highway walking hand in hand with the spirit of the universe. It is so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And then with them there, I'll go into the 6 and 7 step consideration. So again, I'm going to do this slightly differently if it's somebody who has done the work before versus somebody who hasn't done the work before. But if somebody has done the BBA fifth step process before, then we're going to read this returning home paragraph, and we're going to read it and we're going to read the top paragraph on 76. But I'm going to have them go home to review the first 5 proposals, the first 5 steps, and to sit in 6 and hopefully do their step 7. I'm going to have them go home and do all of that. If it's somebody who has not done this process before, then we're going to read all of that together, and then I'm going to review with them the first 5 steps and ask them questions to help them identify what's objectionable. And then they're going to go home to complete their step 6 and ideally their step 7. And so a good reference for this is actually the BBA actually the Big Book Awakening book actually has a good reference for this, and it's found on page 78 and 79, where it says returning home after reading the fifth step considerations. So this would be what I would do, you know, what I would suggest somebody does on their own when they leave. But before that, it says, returning home, we find a place where we can be quiet for an hour, carefully reviewing what we have done. We thank God from the bottom of our heart that we know him better. Taking this book down from the shelf, we return to the page, which contains the 12 steps. I'm in the Big Book right now, that last paragraph of page 75. Carefully reviewing the first 5 proposals, the first 5 steps, we ask if we have omitted anything. So this is the part that I would do with somebody who hasn't done the BBA before. For we're building an arch through which we shall walk a free person at last. Is our work solid so far? So remember, we've been getting this image of a structure that we're building. We had a foundation. We got a cornerstone, we got a keystone, we passed through the archway, and this is what it's asking me. It's asking me to go back. Are the stones properly in place? You know, my cornerstone, my keystone. Have I skimped on the cement, right, that foundation that we find on page 17 that's put into the foundation? Have I tried to make mortar without sand, right? So that's like referencing the circle and triangle. Have I been in, like, no fellowship, just doing my step work? Or have I only been in the fellowship? Have I not been going to God? Or have I been just, you know, like, am I not fully involved in all 3 areas of my circle and my triangle? And so when I'm going through with someone, we're going to pause at each one of these things. We're going to go over it, and I'm going to ask them questions about their foundation. I'm going to ask them questions about their first step. And is it objectionable to you that you have this insanity of your body, of your mind, of your spirit? We're going to talk about this stuff. Is it objectionable to you, you know, that this is a hopeless situation? Are you wanting more power? Do you find it unacceptable, the way that you are living in your step 1 experience? And then in step 2, is it objectionable to you that you're relying on God, that you're relying on your mind, you're relying on everything that you think that you know, that you're holding on to these nuggets, you know, gripping onto them, and that you're worshiping other things and people and not God? Is that objectionable to you? And is it objectionable to you that you're actually playing God? And can you see that playing God doesn't work? Is it objectionable to you that, you know, you're running on self-will and that your life is hardly a success? So we're going to talk about these things. And then this is how I would instruct them to review their 4th step. And in this part, I don't do with them. This is part of what they can do at home, because this is just a beautiful experience to have at home with yourself. Is to picture each person. So sit down with that resentment inventory. Sit down with your pile of inventories. And you're going to picture that person sitting in front of you. And to ask yourself, what do I find objectionable in this interaction? And can I see that I couldn't have done any different? And, you know, am I now willing to turn to God with this? And what I have found when I've done this is that even between the time when the person that was listening to my fifth step asked me those questions when I was going through my fourth, you know, when I was going through my fifth step, when I then, because that was now everything that I've already seen. Like when I, whatever I answered in that time while I was doing the fifth step, I've already seen. But when I then go and I sit with God and I pull that resentment inventory back up and I imagine that person sitting in front of me and I ask God to reveal to me what's objectionable about this interaction, oftentimes I see something even deeper, or I access it at a deeper level. And so it's incredibly powerful to do this. And I do that with each inventory. And then I pull out my fear. And if I find something, like, you know, and I ask myself, is there anything that I'm clinging to, right? And if there's something that I'm clinging to, I just set it aside because we're going to talk about that in a second. And then I move into my fear inventory. And I look at my fear inventory. I look at my fear grid and I ask myself those same questions. Can I see that fear is a conscious choice of me relying on myself rather than God? And do I find that objectionable, that I continue to rely on self and let fears run my life? And am I now willing to turn to God with my fears so that I can commence to outgrow them? So that's what I ask in my fear inventory. And then I sit down with my sex inventory, and I review it the same way as I did with my resentment inventory. I picture each person sitting in front of me, and I ask myself those three questions. And what's great, you know, just referencing the Big Book Awakening here, is that it gives some good description of how to ask myself these questions, you know, how to, I'll get to that in a second. I'll actually read parts of it. But because that's what we're going into right now, is the top of page 76. I instruct people to then read that top paragraph after they've gone through and they've reviewed the whole fourth step, is to go to the top of page 76 and to read that paragraph again. It says, if we can now answer to our satisfaction, then we look at step 6. We've emphasized the willingness of being indispensable. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things which we have admitted are objectionable? Can he now have all of them, everyone? If we are still clinging to something we will not let go of, we ask God to help us be willing. And so this is the process. It gives some really nice descriptions here on page 79 of the Big Book Awakening. And so I encourage you just to read it here, but it says, you know, like, you're going to be looking at what's objectionable and what you're unwilling to turn to God for help with or unwilling to let go of, right? And it says, don't only list words, briefly describe what comes to you when you're unwilling to turn to God. For example, my behavior, I don't want to stop, or resentments I don't want to, you know, resentments I want to hang on to. It says here, I looked at my selfishness, dishonesty, self-seeking, fears, and self-reliance and conduct and relationships in my inventory. What did the objectionable behavior look like in each resentment? So this is what I'm looking at. And so I'm going to start to see maybe some items that I'm still clinging to or not willing to let go of. And this is what I instruct people to do when they're dealing with things that they're not willing to let go of. So, and I want to actually make a distinction between something that, like, I think that there's a difference between being afraid of that you're not able to follow through with your ability to let go of something, and actually simply not wanting to let go of it because it's still working for you. Because 90% of the time when I'm taking someone through their fifth step and we're talking about stuff and we're identifying things that they're clinging to, usually they're wanting to let go of this, but they're also afraid that they don't just want to pay lip service to God and say, God, take this, but they don't have the ability to actually let go of it. And in my experience, you gain the ability by actually giving yourself to God. So, which happens in step 7, not in step 6. It's actually in taking the leap that God provides your next step. And you find yourself on new footing. Remember, we got that from Bill's story, an entirely new footing. And it doesn't mean that you're not afraid. Because, like we talked before, faith and fear can coexist. It just means that you're willing to turn to God despite your fear. You're willing to have God take you further, and you're willing to do what it takes to outgrow that fear. And if you're there, then that's on the side of willing. You know, so that's an important distinction. Now, you might still be clinging to something. And if you're still clinging to something, then don't just take the 7th step. You know, like if I'm still clinging to something, like I've mentioned before, I was clinging to for a very long time, you know, like this belief about my sister, right? And I was holding on to it, and I wasn't ready to let go of it. And then I go into meditation, and that's what I did, asking myself, what is the value of holding on to this? And maybe that meditation takes 5 minutes, maybe it takes an hour, maybe it takes a day, maybe it takes a week. But I keep asking and I keep listening. Because I really have to ask myself, is it worth it to hold on to this? I'm holding everything back in my life and I'm pushing God away because I'm refusing to turn this over. Is it worth it? What's the value? What am I getting out of this? Is it that important? Is the value so great? I get to ask myself these very, very big, very, very deep spiritual questions. I know it says in our sponsorship guide that if you're clinging to something, call your sponsor. I am a big advocate. I mean, especially at this point in the work, we have just done so much incredible. You have done so much incredible work by this point to walk hand-in-hand with your Creator, to get closer to God, that at this point, I really feel like this is between you and God. You know, if you feel like you really, really need to reach out to your sponsor after a couple days of consideration and you really feel stuck, you really feel blocked, or maybe even just a couple hours of consideration, you really feel stuck and you really feel blocked, you've already gone to meditation, you feel guided to call, then call. But I wouldn't just default. That's the guidance that I share with people. I wouldn't just default to calling your sponsor because that's actually like not what we're engaging in this for. We're engaging this to cultivate a deeper and more effective relationship with God. Now, I want to back up for a moment and just share with you what I do upon returning home, because when I leave somebody after giving a fifth step, there actually is a kind of a specific thing that I do that I want to share with you because you might feel guided to do the same thing. So on my ride home, let's say I drove there, I listen to Dan Sherman's recording on step 6 and step 7. That's optional. I've had people recommend it. And I've had people say, nope, there's just too much. You don't need to do that. But I'm just putting it out there because that's something that I have done before. So listen to Dan Sherman's step 6 and step 7. I'm a huge fan of carving out enough time that I can go home after my fifth step and go right into my step six and step seven. Now, that, or at least go right into my step six. The last time I did my steps, I got home late, I was exhausted, and I just went to bed, and I woke up in the morning, but I committed to going right into step six as soon as I woke. There's something very powerful and potent about how we're left after we read our fifth step. We're stripped. We're stripped of our ego. We're open and we're available and we're listening. We're exhausted and we're so done with ourselves. And it's a beautiful time to go into the step six considerations. And my experience is that the more time that you allow to lapse between finishing your fifth step and going into your step six and step seven considerations, the more you become kind of like distanced from that experience. And I like to have as much openness as I'm going into my step six and step seven. So that's just a personal thing. I like to create that time afterwards, after the fifth step, or first thing the next morning. And so I listen to Dan Sherman's step six and step seven. And then I also let other people know, you know, maybe if I live with other people or I've got family or whatever, I let them know that I'm engaged in a sacred process. So that it's not just like, oh, mom's home or dad's home or, you know, roommate's home or whatever it is, and it's just like normal. I let them know that I'm kind of involved in something and that I just need some quiet time. And I'll go into a room where I can be private and alone for a minimum of an hour or a few hours. And one thing that I do, I'll close the door and I'll look at that door and I'll imagine that everything inside the room and everything on this side of that door is everything that I know, right? It's everything from steps one through step six. And I go into my step six considerations like we've just been talking about, and I'm laying my inventories out in front of me, and I'm going through my book, and I'm asking God to help me see the truth and help to reveal to me anything that I haven't yet uncovered, anything that I haven't yet seen, anything that's blocking me. And it's a very, very sacred and special time. And trust that you'll be guided to the places that you are guided to look and the questions that you're guided to ask and the things that you're guided to see. Trust that process. And hopefully, you'll get to a place. I always get to a place in my step six where I feel just, I'm like so done. I'm so done of, I don't even know if there's anything more I can turn over. I'm ready and I'm like, God, just, I'm so done of looking at this stuff. I'm so sick of being this stuff. I'm so sick of showing up in the world this way. Please, please take me. And there's a time that will come when you reach that point. And that's what they mean by when ready. And I wouldn't say the seven-step prayer until I actually felt that. And when you feel that when ready, this is what I do. This is, I get down on my knees. I look at that door. And I imagine that door is now the archway. And on the other side of that door, as I pass through that door, I'm passing through that new and triumphant arch through which I'll pass through to freedom. The other side of that door is walking hand in hand with God, is everything that I don't know. It's who God would have me be on the other side of this threshold. It's like crossing a threshold. And I say the seven-step prayer. And I say amen. Because remember, that amen has just bookended the the third step prayer that began the process. I stand up and I open that door and I walk through. And that for me is incredibly symbolic, incredibly sacred, and incredibly meaningful. And also incredibly, like, real world. You know, we're not in a cave. We're not on a mountain. We're, like, in our own homes or in a private space. And we walk into the world. So it's also very symbolic for me in terms of I'm now walking with God and I'm walking into the world. And I get to be hand in hand with God in all of my affairs. So that is what I do. And once you say, the seventh step is just like the third step, and that it's like it feels so good and juicy. It's really, really easy to want to stay there. And yet faith without works is dead. And so once you've completed your step seven, I want you to reference the sponsorship guide and follow the directions from the sponsorship guide for step eight. And you're going to go, let me see which assignment it is so I can be more specific with you guys. Yeah, so it's this. We're looking at step at assignment 20, and then it gives you the instructions at the bottom of what you want to do to prepare for your step eight. So at this time, I'm going to open up the call and field any questions or any comments. And so if anybody wants to jump on the line, or maybe what actually would be beautiful too is for those of you who are on the line, if you have listened to BBA Fifth Step before and you have something to add or another consideration, I would love to hear that as well. Maybe there's something that really works for you that you would like to impart as well. So I'll just open up the call.
Hey Deb, it's Lynn.
Hi Lynn.
Hey, I don't have anything to impart. I've only listened to, I think for sure, one, maybe two fifth steps, but I just want to say how much I got out of what you just talked about for an hour and a half or more, and just how articulate and how much I connected to it and have a better understanding just from hearing you, and I took a lot of notes, and I really heard you, and I'm just excited for this step of the process. So I just want to thank you for just all the hard work you put into this. I mean, I really feel you. So I just really want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. That's it.
Deb, this is Sue from Massachusetts.
Hi, Sue.
I, too, want to acknowledge you for, this was just excellent. I have 11 pages of notes. I have one question on, you're talking about the harm. What's the ripple effect in your life? Can you see what's objectionable? And then you said, at that point, I have them with a red pen write OBJ around the on your own power, can you be rid of it? So could you just explain, I'm presuming OBJ stands for objectionable and they're supposed to go back and look at it later, but I'm not sure what you meant there.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. So the when I have them have their red pen with them, every time we go over the, like, even when they finish the third column and I say, can you see here what's objectionable, or what behavior do you find objectionable here? Everything that they find objectionable, whether it's in their pride statement or their security statement or their sex relations statement, I'm going to have them write OBJ in the column, in the column to the, you know, the left-handed column, which, yes, stands for objectionable. And then to highlight or circle the sentence that they find objectionable. So it just becomes a way of identifying, and the same thing then when they're going through their fourth column. Specifically, I mean, yes, of course, the actions are objectionable and the attitudes are objectionable, but more specifically, what's objectionable oftentimes are the nature of my defects, because, of course, as long as I have those fears and those delusions, then I'm always going to get those attitudes and those actions. And so what's more objectionable to me is the way that I'm holding on to these fears and these delusions. And so I personally just like circle the entire sections of the delusion statements and the fear statements, and I write OBJ by that. And it means that when I'm then sitting in my step six and I'm reviewing each inventory and I'm looking, I kind of scan the front page and I scan the back page, and I see all of those highlights and all of those little statements that I found objectionable before. And if I feel guided in my six-step process, I'm going to bring those up. I'm going to say, God, I find it objectionable that I'm making my decisions off of my fear of being alone, even though I know that I'm never alone because you're always with me. I find it objectionable that I am living this way. I find it objectionable that I have the delusion that my family needs to essentially be the stand-in God figures for you, and I need them to be a certain way for me to be okay because I don't trust that you're there. That's objectionable to me. God, can you please remove that from me? I want to get closer to you. You know, these are the kinds of things that I might say to myself in a step six. And so it's just a way to help to identify more. But in addition to that, when I'm sitting in my step six and I scan the front page and I scan the back page and then I close my eyes and I picture that person sitting in front of me and I ask God to help me to see what's objectionable about this interaction, oftentimes something even deeper will come through. And so that I hope that answers it a little bit more.
Thank you. Yeah, that was excellent.
Okay, great. Any other questions or comments? And by the way, thank you so much, Lynn and Sue. That, like, brought tears to my eyes because as I was speaking and I got a call from one of you who was on the call, I'm like, my mind was going, am I talking to no one? Did I hang up the call? I had this whole, you know, of course, all the fears that we get, a fear manufacturing plant inside. And so I had all that going on in my head, and I wasn't sure if I was even talking to anyone. So thank you. Anybody else have a comment or a question? Okay, well, if there's no further comments or questions, then I wanted to just clarify something about the step eight process, because it sounds like a lot, but this is what I would like us to aim for, is because let's say that over the next week, you're able to complete your fourth and do your fifth, right? And so five, six, and seven all come together, or early next week. And then you're going to go into the review of your step eight. And what we might do, I'll make it easier on you guys. What I'll just have you do is do your transcribing for eight, and meditate and bring your list. So you're going to show up with your list. And then we're going to review together page 81 from the Big Book Awakening, which shows you and tells you exactly how to write out your cards. And yeah, we'll just do it like that. We'll give you guys, and so you don't have to show up to the next meeting with your cards already completed. Although if you have done this work before, a few times before, and you know how to do it, you can simply show up with your cards completed because you already know how to do that. So after today, let me just pull up our calendar. Okay. So today's the 22nd. So this week and the following week, okay, so we're not going to be meeting on the 1st. So our next call is going to be on the 8th. Is that right? Can somebody help me here? Is it the 8th or the 15th? We're going to take 2 weeks off.
I think it's the 15th. I hope it's the 15th.
Right? It's the 15th. Yeah. I'm looking at that. I'm like, wait a second. Okay. It's the 15th. Okay. There we go. So we're going to be skipping the 1st. We're going to be skipping the 8th. And we're going to be going. Thank you so much. And the next time we're going to be meeting is actually on the 15th. And so get this, we're going to be doing 8 and 9 on the 15th. You're going to continue then every week hereafter to continue to do your step 9, right? This isn't like we're not going to be waiting for everybody to complete their step 9. We're just going to be simply talking about it and going over your three first amends cards. And get everybody clear on their first three, and that's what you're going to do. Every week, you're going to pick three new cards, until you work through all of your resentment and all of your amends. Excuse me. And so by the 22nd, we're going to be going over steps 10 and 11. And by the 29th, we're doing step 12. And then we're done. Can't believe it. So this is really we're moving through, and it's just been incredible. But so after today, I will be reconvening with you on the 15th, and I'll put all of those dates into the playback email so you can be clear. So thank you so much for sharing this time with me, and just for taking this time listening to this, whether you're live on the call or whether you're listening to the recording. I hope that it is helpful. And let's just all close with the third step prayer together. God, I offer myself to thee, to build with me and to do with me as thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help of thy power, thy love, and thy way of life. May I do thy will always.
May I do thy will always.
Thank you, everyone, and take care.